written by James R. Whitfield, narrated by Elena Kahn, first recorded 2026, and now, the American Revolution. Barolaju, the world that made a revolution possible. The British North American colonies in 1763 were not, by any reasonable assessment, a country in the modern sense. They were 13 separate political units, each with its own colonial charter, its own legislative assembly, its own governor, some appointed by the crown, some elected by the colonial proprietors, depending on the specific colony, its own legal system based on English common law, but with substantial local variations, and its own particular political and economic culture. The 13 colonies had relatively little in common with one another, beyond their shared status as British colonial possessions and their broadly similar histories of English settlement. New England, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire was substantially different in its religious culture, its economic activity, and its social structure from the southern colonies of Virginia, the Carolinas, and Georgia. The middle colonies, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, were different again with their substantial religious and ethnic diversity. Pennsylvania alone contained substantial populations of English, German, Scots-Irish, Welsh, and various smaller groups, drawn from a variety of religious traditions, including Quakers, Anglicans, Lutherans, Mennonites, Catholics, and Jews. The colonial population in 1763 was approximately 2.5 million people, of whom approximately 500,000 Euro were enslaved African Americans, concentrated primarily in the southern colonies. The free population was substantially of English descent, but contained substantial minorities of Scots-Irish, German, Dutch, French, Huguenot, and other European origins. The indigenous population in the territories the colonies claimed, but did not yet effectively occupy. Primarily, the Trans-Appalachian interior numbered perhaps 200,000 in the eastern half of the continent, organized in dozens of distinct nations, with their own political institutions, and their own complex relationships with the various European colonial powers. The economic situation of the colonies in 1763 was generally prosperous. The colonial economies had been growing rapidly through the 18th century, with substantial agricultural production for both domestic consumption and Atlantic export. The fisheries of New England, the grain production of the middle colonies, the tobacco of Virginia and Maryland, the rice and indigo of South Carolina and Georgia, the timber and naval stores produced across the colonial territories. All of these were substantial export industries integrated into the broader British imperial economy. The colonial commercial class was substantial and increasingly sophisticated. The colonial elite was broadly comfortable by the standards of the period, with substantial property, substantial education, and substantial political experience through their participation in the various colonial assemblies. The political institutions of the colonies in 1763 were broadly Anglo-American in their structure, but contained features that differentiated them from the British political institutions they were modeled on. Each colonial assembly had been progressively expanding its claims to authority over local affairs throughout the 18th century. The assemblies had taken substantial control over taxation, over the appointment of various officials, over the regulation of local commerce, and over the various other domestic matters. The royal governors, while formally exercising substantial authority, had progressively become subject to the practical constraints that the assemblies could impose through their control of revenues. The pattern was that, by 1763, the colonies were substantially self-governing in their internal affairs, even if the formal constitutional framework continued to assert the supremacy of the British Parliament. What changed in 1763 was the British government's calculation that the post-war imperial situation required a substantially more centralized administration. The Royal Proclamation of October 1763, the various tax measures of 1764 to 1765, the development of the broader imperial reform program, all of these reflected a British calculation that the colonies needed to be brought into a more direct administrative relationship with the central imperial government. The colonial response to this calculation was the substantial resistance that produced the next 13 years of escalating confrontation. The shooting war that began at Lexington and Concord on April 19, 1775, came after 13 years of progressive imperial colonial alienation. The political logic of the conflict by April 1775 was substantially in favor of the colonial position. The colonies had developed substantial intercolonial coordination through the various Stamp Act Congresses, Continental Congresses, and committees of correspondence that had been